Hi, folks. I'm Daryl Frank, and I thank you for listening. And I also welcome you to episode 5 of Frankly Speaking with Daryl Frank, where we tell stories of extraordinary people of the Seacoast. As always, I'm joined by the producer of our podcast, Jeff Robert, fresh off his Baltimore Ravens cruising past the Buffalo Bills. You feel a little bit better about your boys?
So good. So good. After that first run, it was happiness.
Yeah. First play. Yeah.
That's it.
Busting it right out.
Awesome. And I'd like to welcome this episode's guest, Donovan Engel, someone who is, and before I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of a teaser on this, an individual who made the transformation from an Indiana boy coming over to the Seacoast and just immersing himself in the Seacoast community. Him, along with his now wife, Hannah, they have somewhat called become Seacoastites, I'm going to say it. So, Donovan, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I got to ask, and before we tell people what you do, so how did that all transpire as far as, you know, Louisville boy, college grad?
Born and raised in Indiana, and it's been pretty much all of childhood, all of high school, everything in Indiana. Went to college in Louisville, Kentucky, which was right across the river. It wasn't like it was a far move at all. Then we lived in Louisville in the Louisville area for a few years, and really had enough of Indiana. I feel like we had experienced everything there was to experience in that area of the United States. So we just wanted to try something new. And we had always thought about it and were looking up places. I know we'll get into it, but Hannah and I visited up here in 2019, very briefly, and got kind of a feel of the area. We're like, hey, if anything ever came up here, we'd give it a shot, and it would seem like a place we'd like to live. So the year goes by, the pandemic hits, and that kind of is what kickstarted everything, kind of the being stuck at the house, stereotypical, like, just get me out of here, literally get me out of here. And I just began to apply places all over, from Portland, Oregon, Salt Lake City, Utah. We were really like one coast to the other. My preference was probably more West Coast, actually, and Hannah was more East Coast. It was a little bit closer to Indiana, so it was a little bit of an easier sell to the family and everything. So out of that, ended up getting in contact with a firm in Portsmouth, and this was probably August of 2020. Go through a couple interviews. My now boss was like, hey, we really like you. The only problem is you're in Indiana, and we're in Portsmouth. So are we doing this or not? And he offered to fly Hannah and I up literally on Halloween weekend of 2020. It was snowing here whenever we flew up. So we got the true New England experience, like, right off the bat. We got some snow in Indiana where we were, but not much. So it was like, get our literal feet wet right off the plane. Yes.
So that's the year then that Halloween was canceled.
Yeah, yes.
That night.
Yeah.
I remember
the place was a ghost town. So I had a little interview during the day, and then we went out for dinner and got food, got some drinks. And I think we were the only people in the restaurant and maybe the only people on the decks in Portsmouth at that time, which I found out now that Halloween is like the night in Portsmouth. So yeah, it was complete ghost town, which was kind of nice. After that, let us kind of walk around the town and get to see everything, which I think we were the only people in downtown. We kind of just aimlessly wandering, but we're like, this place is beautiful. We like it. And literally that night, we went back to the hotel and I told Hannah, I'm like, all right, are we doing this or not? And we agreed right there that we were going to do it, and flew back home, got a job offer. And then Thanksgiving weekend, we were moving up here. So it all happened pretty fast.
Wow.
Yep.
So, and it's funny you say that, because out of Indiana, you and Hannah are my two favorite exports outside of Larry Bird. Outside of Larry Bird.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So actually, our hometown is a very small town. It's called Tell City, T-E-L-L City. It's named after William Tell, if you've heard of that, out of Switzerland or something like that. But it's funny, when you're driving on Interstate 64 and you get to our exit, you can take a left that takes you to Tell City. You take a right, it goes to French Lick. So we were literally share the same exit as Larry Bird. It was probably 30, 45 minutes away. There may be less people in French Lick than Tell City, actually. There's a casino there, and that's about it. Yeah, not much.
I almost wore my Larry Legend hoodie, but didn't get home in time.
Yep.
Okay, so now You're a Seacoast type.
Yes.
What we want to talk about with Donovan about is it's a unique skill set that he has. And people, I've got friends that are athletes that try and say playing hockey is the toughest sport. Hitting a baseball is the toughest sport. But anything that I have read in doing my pre-show work on said the toughest thing in sports is to run a marathon. And
okay.
I think that part of that, and Jeff and I have kind of talked about that pre-show before you getting here, I think it's the mental aspect as well as the physical aspect
Absolutely.
Of it.
Yeah.
So with that, how many marathons have you completed in the U.S. at this point?
I've done 7 so far, and we'll be hopefully completing my 8th in 13 days, 2 weeks from yesterday. So I'm sure we'll be getting into that, but yeah. So Chicago Marathon in 2 weeks' time, so... That's the next one.
So now I can tell you that I've done my show prep. So you've already done your 20-mile run and you're doing your tapering down?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So all the 20-milers are behind me. I had a 16-miler yesterday. That's like the last like real any run of substance between now and in the marathon. I still will run probably 5 days a week just to keep the legs moving. One more small workout like the Wednesday before. But between now and then, it's just... easy runs, eating healthy, staying hydrated. That all the work's done.
So is Chicago the crown jewel, and that kind of completes the U.S. gold, and then you kind of
shift gears? Yeah. So the ultimate goal, what I'd like to do, is complete all 6 of the world majors, is what they call them. I think it was established last 10, 15 years or so. But there's 3 in the U.S. and 3 international ones as it stands currently. So there's Boston, New York, and Chicago are the 3 U.S. I've done Boston twice, did New York last fall, and then Chicago will finish that off. The 3 international are London, Tokyo, and Berlin, which actually just happened yesterday morning. So
I got to ask, because it's going to roll into other parts of the conversation, what was the winning time on that?
For the men, I think it was like 2:03 for Berlin. I want to say in women was like low 2:20s. I could be wrong, maybe high teens. The women have been like crushing world records, like... every 6 months. It's been insane.
Now, because I can remember there was like a significant gap back when I was younger. I won't give the years out, but anyways, there was a significant gap between the two, but it does seem like
and
the women are closing that
gap. Yeah, and I don't know like the full science on it, but women are actually better suited the longer the distance goes, and that's kind of played out in the marathon where, the world record times probably were 20, 30 minutes apart for much of history. Now it's like 15, 20 minutes, which is...
So I think it's 11 minutes.
Yeah, 11. Okay, yeah. So in pretty much anything else, if you like look at anything above like 100 meters, if you compare the two, like you compare them like percentages, like it's probably the marathon that's the closest the men versus women's world record of any distance, so... Not to mention all the increased access of women just across the world that are able to run where, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they weren't even allowed in Boston, not like 50, 60, 70 years, maybe even sooner than that. Was it the 80s, the 70s?
60s? It might have been, because I can always remember Samuelson, as I remember, she's got to be like 80 and she's still running.
Yeah,
obviously she's not running her.
Yeah.
She always seemed to be, when Bill Rogers was winning in the mid-70s to, I think his last win was 79 or maybe even 80, 81. It was Benoit Samuelson, who was a local lady as far as to Massachusetts, always winning there.
Yeah,
so.
She's from Maine, I believe. And then she does the beach to Beacon every year up in Cape Elizabeth. That gets world-class runners. So that's always... fun to watch too.
Nice. Yeah. So before I get into your stuff, let's talk about how it is to become one of the 1%ers. Because I there's a theme here that I'm kind of trying to build the conversation on. Is 1% of the population runs marathons. It's like 1.1 million across the world are marathoners. So if someone were to say, I'm going to become a 1%er, and they're sitting on the couch holding the remote, first thing I found, and maybe I'm completely off, is like you have to get a base mileage established before you really even want to consider.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Can we explain to people what a base mileage is?
Yeah, I think that's going to depend person to person, actually, of like just in general, like how active they already are. Because if you're already active and doing stuff, like transitioning into running is going to be a lot easier than literally coming off the couch. And then I guess it also depends on what your goal is. It literally just to crawl across that finish line, or like are you trying to like feel good while doing it? I feel like those are kind of two different things. I think most people would surprise themselves of being able to finish. I think a lot of people could do it. I think it's just very intimidating, and it may not feel very good. It's gonna hurt like hell to do it. But to like get in shape of where like you feel confident going in that, oh, I'm gonna reach that finish line, that kind of thing. I would say it's gonna vary person to person. And if you're just purely running, I mean, you're probably going to be wanting to run at a minimum like 40, 50 miles a week. But you can supplement that with whatever fitness that you enjoy doing, whether it's riding a bike, swimming, just anything to keep the body moving. Yeah. Like you're going to need to run a handful of times a week probably, but you're not running 80 miles a week just to reach the finish line.
So let me ask you this though, with someone running, say, to get that base mileage up, would you recommend something not as impactful as running? Like maybe do an elliptic.
Yeah.
Maybe do a swimming.
Yeah. Especially if you're going from like zero, like you're starting, like you don't do really anything outside of like walking maybe. Yeah. You're going to want to do something else to supplement it, because as soon as you try to up the running from, you'd probably start with like 1 or 2 days a week to 3 to 4 or 5. If you just ramp right up, your body's probably gonna shut down on you. You're probably gonna get hurt or get sick or something like that pretty fast.
So yeah. So and you just hit on a good point too, because you want to kind of have a pretty, I don't want to say substantial, but you want to have a healthy amount of miles before you kind of ramp that up.
Yeah, the rule of thumb I always hear is like a 10% jump in mileage, and from 1 week to the next is kind of like a good. So if you're running 20 miles, then 22, and then 24, and going from there, not going from 20 to 25 to 30.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in decent, just general shape, you could probably get away with that. But if you're going starting from nothing, good way to get hurt. Yeah.
All right. So we're talking about a base mile. And the other piece too is you've mentioned your max runs, and it seems like something that kind of is just embedded in the fabric of marathon training is a 20-mile run is your max run.
Yeah. It, again, varies from person to person. I'll go up to 22, but I usually will cut it off there. Yeah. And I know some runners that will go a little bit higher. And everything I'm kind of talking about is like my realm. Like the professional runners are complete other beasts. Like those guys will run 20, 30 miles every day while they're marathon training, like 180 miles a week. Like, we're not that. We're mere mortals down here. 20 to 22 is kind of generally seen as your max that you're going to hit in any one run leading up to the marathon.
So I got two questions then for us here. The first one is, in your experience, do you find truly that all those goals that you've set for yourself mentally and physically, that the last 6 miles, 385 yards is pure adrenaline and goal driven? Because your max run is 20 miles, or in your case, 22. You still got 4 miles and 385 yards to go.
Yeah. In my experience, whether I've done a long run of 22 or 20, or whatever it's going to be, once you reach mile 20, 22, it's going to hurt regardless. So I don't think there's anything that you can do to, like, the marathon's designed to
break you.
To hurt even the best of the best. They're running. They're running a lot faster, but watch a Boston Marathon and there may be a pack of 10 to 12 come through mile. Usually like 18, 19, because then you throw in Heartbreak Hill there. So that's when a lot start to fall off. But that, in pretty much every marathon, around mile 20 to 22 is where everyone kind of is like, all right, separates themselves of who's going to win this, who's not, or who's going to break and who's not. So that's a lot. Yes, adrenaline definitely plays a role of like just get me to the finish line, get me done. But also, I think a lot of emphasis gets placed on the long run because the long run is very important. Like, I guess you could run a marathon without going over like 15, 16 miles, but it's probably going to be a little bit harder. You need to let your body feel what that is like to be at that point 20 miles in and hurting beforehand. But I really think it's more of like the culmination of all the miles that really pay off in that last 6 miles that carry you through. So it's going to hurt regardless, but if you've been training every single day or a majority of days, and that's what's going to carry you. It's not necessarily like, oh, I did that 20-mile run, I'm good. It's I've done the 20-mile run and then came back the next day, ran another 10 miles, and the next day another 8, or whatever that's going to be. It's really the getting after it every single day that carries you through.
So let me ask you, do you feel yourself... And talking, and I don't know if you're talking to other people, because we'll talk about another piece of the accountability factor that they ask you to establish when you choose this goal. When you're doing, say, your long run or even parts of your training, is hitting that wall during the training similar to the hitting the wall at, say, prior to Heartbreak Hill or going up Heartbreak Hill, or is it different, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So in training, you're never quite pushing yourself to that limit that you are when you're racing and trying to hit that goal. But I think in training, you can try to simulate it as best as you can. Like, you do want to be pushing yourself occasionally to find that breaking point, if you will, or just like know, like, all right, I'm going to be hurting at this point. Let me simulate that in this workout and run it on tired legs or whatever and get to the end of it. And try pushing through that, because eventually you are going to face it in the race, and it's probably going to hurt a lot more. But again, as you were mentioning, with adrenaline and marathons like Boston and New York, that's where the biggest crowds are, like the last bit too. Yeah. So like that always helps. So that will carry you through. And I find the mistake a lot of people actually make is like early on, everything feels so good because of the adrenaline, because of the crowds and all that. That's where people get in trouble, is they start a little too fast because of it. Yeah. And I've fallen victim to that before as well.
I was a basketball player and I played some other sports, and you just know when your swing is right in baseball or softball, or your shot is just, I mean, the hoop looks like the ocean.
Yeah.
Can you feel yourself in that 26.385? Can you feel yourself like, my stride is just right?
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely, because you sit there and you see – my wife and I, Kim, we'll go by and it's like, that poor person cannot be having any fun running, because their stride is Can you feel yourself like, oh, I'm locked in? Is there such a...
Yeah. Definitely you get in that zone just like any other athlete is. But also I think another thing that's nice about actual race day is every workout, every run throughout your training process is on tired legs. You're exhausted from the last workout you had, the last week that you just had, where now for the race, you've been able to give yourself some time to relax, recover, get your legs straight and back under you. So on race day, you should feel better than you have throughout your training. Like, you've let your legs recover. In training, you're constantly kind of wearing them out, letting them recover a little bit, and then wearing them out again, let them recover a little bit, where you're never fully like healthy, I guess, is like, and have really fresh legs. So a lot of times when you get to the race, that's like the first time in months that you've actually felt good.
That's kind of what I'm wondering is, like, have you gone into one of your many marathons that you've done and say, man, how am I going to finish this?
Yes. Yeah. So actually, going back to the very beginning of our conversation in 2019, I was running Boston for the first time. I had ran two marathons before, actually while I was still in college. And this was like, I was transitioning into working full time. Hannah and I just moved in together. I was like, all right, if I'm ever going to do the Boston Marathon, I need to do it now before this running thing ends for me. And so I ran a marathon, qualified for Boston, and then proceeded to barely run for the next year. I signed up and I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. This is going to be my motivation to get back into it. And I was not in good shape for that one. So 2019 Boston Marathon was not a good one. I reluctantly say I ran that one because there was a few walking breaks, to say the least, in that one. So I know of, like, when I'm prepared for a marathon and what it feels like to not be prepared for one. And that's where I also was saying, like, I think most people would surprise themselves of just being able to get to the finish line. Like, I had no business being in the Boston Marathon that day, but it was just like, I'm going to reach that finish line, and that's all I'm going to do today. And that's all the energy I had.
Was that the worst time of all your marathons?
Oh, by far. Yeah, okay. Like, over an hour and 5 minutes slower than all the others. Like, I literally went into this one, like, I was a little self-confident and just being like, oh, I've done this a couple times before. Like, yes, I know I'm not coming in shape, but I can still just run and get through it. I could not.
Okay, so let's kind of roll into, I want to kind of talk about one of the things I was surprised about, not surprised about, but how much water and then the carbohydrates that they want you to, and I pulled this up, the fueling, even in race, they were talking about the grams of carbohydrates per hour of your race.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, whether it's energy gels, chews, there's all kinds of, we don't see any of these people crossing the finish line with, like, backpacks. It's like you're almost going, for lack of a better term, and I don't mean to use a phrase lightly, but it's almost like you're going to battle.
Yeah.
But with all these people,
a few gels and the water they give you along the course. Yeah.
So, okay. So yeah. That's what I was going to ask. So are people running, because I always see, anyways, people running by and just grabbing a cup. And
yep.
Half of it gets spilled on you.
Yeah. Yeah. You could try to, like, collapse the cup a little bit, like the rim of the cup, and like fold it and suck it back a little bit. But most of it's still getting on you. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Right. So what is your, like, are they strategically placed? And the other piece too is when you're training, I noticed in one of the things it said is when you're doing your, particularly when you're doing your long run, that 20 to 22 is to go out before your race and strategically place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your water. Yep. So you,
yeah. So, just as important as running the long runs is, like, practicing the nutrition as well of taking water sips, because if you're not used to drinking water while you're running, that you're probably going to get a stomach ache or something like that. You got to kind of train the body to, all right, I'm running this pace, but also I need to be taking in water and nutrition and stuff like that. So yeah, most of the time, like, I'll wear a belt that can hold a handful of gels. Usually I take one every 5 or 6 miles is usually kind of my rule of thumb, not like hard and fast to that. Depends on what I'm doing for the day and that kind of thing. But on race day, I'm trying to take one every, pretty strategically every 5 to 6 miles, taking a gel. And then water stops, they usually place them every mile, maybe not like for the first mile, but pretty much from mile 2 to mile 26, it's on every single mile, there's a water stop. Early on, I may stop at, like, every other one, depending on how much I got from the last water stop. If I barely got any, like, I'm going to hit the next one. But yeah, I want to consistently be getting water in me. And a lot of races will also give, like, some type of electrolyte drink, whether it's a Gatorade or some type of powder that sponsors the event. But you want to mix kind of that in too, so you're not just solely relying on water.
Yeah. So will that be at that same water station, or do you just have to? Are those alternated throughout?
So usually they're at the same water station. They'll have, like, a first section is electrolytes, second part is water, or vice versa, something like that. And some of them will have, if you don't want to carry your own gel or you're going to need too many, they'll have some gel stops along the way as well. But
from what I read, and I don't want, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
You might be messing with what's going to help you if you've never had that gel.
That's where I was going to go with. Okay, yeah, yeah, it's like, there again, it's whoever sponsors the race, whoever's giving them some money, that they want their product to be used. So it's great if you've been using that, but if you haven't, then yeah, you're risking it. I actually, in Boston, the good year that I ran in 2023, I had ran out of gel, and it was late in the race. It was probably like mile 23. So I had used up my 4 or 5 gels that I brought along with me, and I was like starting to feel myself getting a little tired. So I was like, I know there's a gel stop up here, let me just grab one and I'll take it. And it was one of the Martin bicarbonate or whatever they are. I'd never had one before. I rip it open, put it in my mouth. Worst thing I've ever tasted in my life. And it literally spit it out. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going the rest of this race without anything because I couldn't even force it back. Yeah.
So let's stop for a second on the training side of it. No headphones, no nothing. We had Steve Turner in here who does...
Amazing episode, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks, Steve. Yeah. Steve was a great guest, as are you. It just blows my mind that you guys are just out there with your inner thoughts. Do you think that helps? I was surprised, too, because some races don't allow it,
yeah. It's very loosely. They say on the website it's not allowed, but they're not going to stop anyone. But that varies person to person again. I've just always been... no headphones, just go out and do it, which is so funny because literally anything else I do my entire day, whether it's taking a shower, working, I have a podcast or music or something's playing, Pat McAfee show, whatever's on constantly every single day, like cooking dinner or whatever. But yeah, for some reason, the hour, 2 hours that I'm out running, I just prefer just me and myself. And I used to think it was the music got me out of rhythm of like, oh, you're listening to a fast song, you run faster, you listen to a slow song. And I think a bit of that's true, but I don't know. I don't like it. Occasionally I'll if I really like am just dreading getting out the door and I just need something, a little extra motivation, like I'll throw on an audiobook or a podcast, but rarely ever music. But I do know other runners that one of my good friends and runner in Seacoast area, he'll run races with music, and he's probably the fastest runner I know in the area. So it's not like all fast runners don't listen to music or anything like that. It's just, I think, personal preference.
It just blows my mind from that standpoint. It's I don't know. When I go to the gym and I'm lifting, I don't like we're playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. It's kind of like.
Yeah. You know, again, so. Yeah, literally anything else I do in my life, I want music or something and going to the gym. Yeah, I couldn't imagine going without headphones. But yeah, just running is different. It allows me time to think and to, a lot of, I prefer to run later in the day. I'm not a big morning runner. So it kind of, it's my hour of recapping whatever happened with the day or really just wherever my mind takes me. Yeah.
So it's not just, it's like for me, it would be, all right, just make it to that next telephone call and then I'd repeat the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Some days are definitely okay. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. Some days I'm like, man, I wish I had something to distract me, but yeah.
So the other piece too, that is going through this and kind of preparing is it says establish accountability. And yet, as we talked about earlier, it's 1.1% of the people, the one percenters, and that was in multiple articles. So it's like, okay, let me research this a little bit, but it seems to be pretty pronounced. And they say, if you're going to do this, you got to establish accountability. Is there, like you mentioned, the individual that runs with the headphones in there? How many other people? Is there a group? Is there, you know what I mean? Is there somebody that somebody could tie into if they were to get
look
into
at their
this.
Running and stuff like that. Yeah, there's, I think that's what is so great about running is literally anyone can do it. You just put on shoes and go out and do it.
Yeah, only 1% do the marathon.
Yeah. No, it's, 1% of us are crazy enough to give it a shot, I guess. But yeah, I think there's a lot of like pub runs. I know I think it's Run 603 or 603 Run Club or whatever. They do, there's one in Dover. I think there's one here in Rochester. I know there's one in Portsmouth that's for people that are looking to run with people, and they run like 3 or 5 mile routes, and they end at a brewery and all have a drink. So like that's what's a little extra motivation to get you out, right? But then there's honestly from how I've met people in the area of moving here and not knowing anyone in the running community was literally just like signing up for local races. You run the race and you figure out, okay, well, these three people finished right by me. We probably run close to the same time. You get talking to them and they likely run with people. And there's a great group of people in the Seacoast, a very active community. So if you want to run, there is someone that runs your pace. That, unless you're like going to run a 2-flat marathon. I haven't met any of those around just yet here, but there might be one or two around that we can find for you.
We'd like to take this time to thank our sponsors. Tasker Funeral Home, located at 621 Central Ave in Dover. Phone number is 603-742-4961. As well as Grondon Funeral Home, 177 North Main Street in Rochester, 603-332-1563. And last but not least, McIntyre McCooey Funeral Home at 301 Main Street, South Berwick, Maine, 207-384-2373. We'd also like to thank our other sponsor, Jeff Big Daddy Goss, owner of the Clipper Tavern at 75 Pleasant Street, Portsmouth, where you'll find the Mac Daddy, my personal favorite. Also, Jitto's Super Steak Sub Shop at 3131 Lafayette Road, where you'll find the Steak, Egg, and Cheese Sandwich as my personal favorite there also. And then the Sweet Spot, Cape Nettic Country Club, where you're going to find the best coconut margarita on the planet. Thanks to our sponsors. So, with everything we've talked, you've got a busy schedule, and, you know, work-wise, this is a huge time commitment. And now, congratulations are in order with the little one on the way.
Yeah.
How do you find the balance?
Yeah. I feel very fortunate to have a career that I have control over my schedule. So that plays a huge role. But I also think, like, whatever you're going to prioritize, you're going to find time to do, right? And running's always been, outside of like a year or so here, training for my first Boston experience where I didn't really run. But running's just always kind of been a priority. So no matter what I was doing, I always made time. So some days that's on my lunch break, some days that's after work, some days that's before work, just whenever I have time to do it. But eventually, I know I'm not going to have that flexibility with, as you mentioned, a little one set to arrive in January. So I'm already kind of
congratulations,
yes,
by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I know that's going to bring a big change. So eventually, I know I'm going to have to transition probably to running in the mornings, like most days. It's just going to be what's going to be most convenient, less things that are going to get in the way of it. But I've been pushing that off as long as I can. I can get myself up on the weekends, ironically, but not like before work. I'm just like, first thing is just get to work. And then after work's kind of my time to let it out through running and that kind of thing to end the day.
So the other question I have about the training and the preparation and stuff like that. So it did mention two additional training. So how or what would be the recommendation? I know we talked about the elliptical and stuff like that. That's more, I thought, maybe I'm kind of missing the boat on that. When I read that, I'm thinking, okay, that's going to keep your cardio up for your base mileage. It's going to keep the impact off your joints.
Yeah.
Is there other training that kind of, that you would, like, it mentioned a couple cross-training stuff, but it didn't really mention, how does that play into the overall marathon training, if you will?
Yeah, so that's something I could improve on, is like everything else that goes into it. Like, I enjoy running, so I run. So I've tried getting into the gym and consistently going to the gym. Every single time I find myself going for a few weeks and then slowly falling off. Maybe I start going like 3-4 days a week, and then it's two, and then it's one, and then all of a sudden, oh, I haven't been in 3 weeks and I'm still paying for this membership. So again, I think it's like staying active is the key thing, of like, you can't run and run and run and run. Like, you're going to get hurt or something like that. So it's balancing that out. And that's part of your job in training, is to make sure that you're training smart. You're not killing it every single day, running as hard as you can, because eventually that's going to get you hurt, or you're just not going to improve that way. So you can supplement it through, like, today I went for a bike ride instead of running. I've tried swimming occasionally, and just anything kind of just to switch it up. I mean, even like some days I'll take the dog up to the Whites and we'll go for a hike, and anything just kind of keep the legs moving. Like, I don't think it's a replacement for a run, but it's better than me sitting on the couch and eating pizza or whatever, whatever it is, which I will do, but feel better if I've gotten some sort of workout in beforehand.
Okay, so now someone like yourself, you got the 20 miles in. Okay, now I'm going to jump on the bike. What is your mileage on something like that?
Yeah, so I think the kind of rule of thumb conversion is 3 miles on the bike equals about 1 mile ran. Okay. So it, like today, I was scheduled for an off day, but I just wanted something just to just keep the legs moving. Yeah. So I went for a 12-mile bike ride, which is so equivalent to like maybe a 4-mile run. And again, it's not a one for one, but it was something that I could keep my heart rate up or get my heart rate up today, but not have my legs pounding on the pavement 2 weeks before my a marathon. Yeah,
because it's still going to be a ratio to, you know, you want the legs fresh, but I just pounded them.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And I try to,
even if it's a 3-to-1 ratio, you still.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try to, like, if I'm substituting in a bike ride for an easy run, like, I'm not going to go out and ride my bike as hard as I can. I'm going to treat it like as if I was running and like just kind of leisurely go out there, try to get the heart rate up a little bit, but not trying to be absolutely exhausted by the end of it.
Now, same thing, would you try and keep your pace in the bike the same as what they say for a pace for running, where you should be able to have a small conversation? Not that you
can. Yeah. So that's a great question. I think a good transition into kind of training as well. But heart rate is, I think, a great measure of how much effort you're exerting. So I know in an easy run, I try to keep my heart rate somewhere like 130 to 140. So when I'm on the bike, I'm kind of trying to do the same, which I find myself have to push a little harder on a bike to get up to that range. So if I'm at like 110, 115, 120, like close enough. Okay. Yeah. I'm getting the heart rate up. Yeah. I'd rather be a little bit low than being at like 160 and like where I'm basically essentially doing a workout, but instead of running, I'm doing it on the bike and I'm just exhausting myself when I should be taking it easy. Yeah.
Yeah. But we're guys and we're not going to listen to our bodies until it shuts down.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I would say that's like the biggest change that I've made in the last few years is, of course, starting running in high school, like every single day of practice was a race of us teammates, just whoever could get back to the school first after our 6-mile run that was supposed to be easy. And I'm coming in at 5:30 pace. And I'm like, no business doing that. And just the reason for that is like your body can't run as hard as you can push it to every single day. Either, as I've mentioned many times, you're going to get hurt or you're just not going to improve that way. You need to, some of your runs are just for purpose of just keeping the legs moving and getting mileage in. Nothing sexier than that. It's just getting out there.
Yeah. So I do have to ask, because you mentioned it, the high school piece. Now, was Hannah's dad your track coach?
No, he was not. So he actually coached our coaches in high school. So he was a coach when Hannah and I were both little. I want to say he transitioned out maybe a decade or so before we were in high school. But both the boys and the girls coach ran for Hannah's dad.
Okay.
So, it was kind of the lineage was still there. And Hannah's dad would show up at practice occasionally. He was always obviously at meets when Hannah was there, and he's a great speaker. So like anytime we would have like a cross country camp or something like that, he would come and speak. Actually, he coached quite a few runners that ended up being coaches both at our high school and other high schools in Indiana. So we would kind of meet up once a summer, like our school would get together with the other two programs that had our alumni as coaches, and we would get together and he would come speak and everything. So that's like ultimate goal, like down the road of like where I see running for me, like finding that ultimate purpose, is I would love to get into coaching in some capacity. Yep. I've done it a little bit, actually helping with elementary school in Portsmouth.
Which elementary, if you don't mind me asking?
New Franklin School.
Oh,
yeah.
The Atlantic Heights rival.
Yeah.
I was a hikester.
Yeah, were you? Yeah. So there's a teacher that kind of spearheads it, but all the elementary schools get together. They have a little cross-country season and a little track season. It's very low-key, like practice one day a week, and a meet one day a week for like 4 or 5 weeks. So it's very low key, nothing. We're not trying to really we're just trying to keep the kids active and let them run and that kind of thing. But yeah, so I've dipped my toe in and helped with that. That was easy on the schedule of I could convince the boss a lot easier to let me out for an hour for 2 days versus a few hours 5 days a week. So if it's in some sort of school or whatever it is, I'd love to coach one day.
That's awesome. Well, let's go into that. So how long do you see yourself running full marathons? Because I mean, it's like I brought it up with Steve too.
Yeah,
you've got so many steps in your body, you got so many beats of your heart. How long do you think you want to do this full marathon?
So my answer may surprise you of like, I don't see myself like going down from here. Like if I'm ending marathoning, like I want to do something else. Like maybe it's not full marathons, but ultras do intrigue me. Like maybe one day of doing that. But as far as like how I'm doing it right now of a couple marathons a year, trying to run them as fast as I can, like I'll keep doing that as long as my body will allow me. I've been very, very fortunate. I'm knock on wood when I say this. Never really gotten hurt or anything like that. And I think that comes
goes to your training.
Training and just kind of, you know, being smart and taking care of your body. So I've been very fortunate that I've never had any major injuries or anything like that that's slowed me down. So I feel like I can keep doing it as long as I want. And coming back to like local runners, one of the runners I run with just ran Berlin yesterday, 51 years old, set a new personal record. So it's like
awesome.
Yeah, the time frame like for marathoning, it's a slow decline. So whereas like shorter stuff, once you hit a certain age, you just like football players, basketball players, or whatever, you start to go downhill. But for marathoners, surprisingly, that decline is way slower. Like some of the best marathoners in the world are still in upper 30s, 40s. So you can do it for a long time. The question for me is the time commitment. Yeah, that's going to be the hardest thing. And then just like, how long do I just want to keep pushing myself to run as fast as I can? Because at the end of the day, I just enjoy running, and I'm interested in pushing myself and running in other ways than just seeing how fast I can run 26.2. Definitely want to get through the six majors. And then those are like all of the time focused ones I think that I'll focus on. I will probably do more just along the way as I'm completing those. But once those are done, and I'd love to run under a 2-hour and 40-minute marathon is kind of like my ultimate time goal. Like once I can check all those boxes, I'd be content with, all right, let's see what else is out there and start checking some of those boxes.
So let's talk about that for a second. Let's segue into that. So you're talking about running a sub 240.
That's my ultimate goal.
What's your best today? What's your personal record?
Yeah, so this past spring I ran a 2:43:30 with a caveat of that does include a bathroom break in there actually too. I was quick, thankfully, with that. So it took me about 45 seconds to a minute. 2:43:30 officially, but it counts. I was in the bathroom for that time. But if you take that out, you know, it's probably like a mid of 2:42-ish.
You realize if that is in 1975 to 79, that's like 20 minutes off Bill Rogers.
Yep. Yep.
So what
but
is
it's, the marathon has changed so much since that time, and really just in the last like handful of years. One credit being shoe technology. Like I'm sure when you're doing your research and looking at marathon training, super shoes probably got brought up there. Like the shoes for marathoners, like they're basically springs now. Like it is a cheat code. That's why we're seeing such fast times.
Yeah.
But I don't think like someone like me, like maybe that's taking off a little bit of time, but I don't think I'm 5 minutes faster because of a pair of shoes. I think that's a lot more of the training and stuff like that that goes into that. But it certainly doesn't hurt to have that additional technology.
But don't you think, though, I mean, and I'm not belittling the shoe's impact, but if you know you're running in a decent shoe, you're not going to really think about your feet, even if they – because your feet are still going to hurt.
Yeah.
You're running 26 miles.
Yeah,
385 yards.
Yeah.
I always tell that. But the other piece that I did pick up on, too, and this is my naiveness to the whole thing, if that's even a word, is there's special running socks as well.
Yeah.
That's something I didn't...
Oh, you... So you could spend some serious money on running socks.
So what's the technology behind that? I don't.
The technology, I have no clue, but you do want a good, like, I'm wearing, like, cotton socks right now. That would not be caught dead running in these, or that's Blister City. Like, you're going to be losing toenails. You're going to be blistering all over the place. Basically, the cotton socks hold in moisture where the running socks are thin. They're like the dry fit material. Yeah. So, yeah, they definitely matter. I don't think I run in, like, it sounds outrageous with just like a $10 pair of like Nike socks, but when looking at other running socks are like $30 for one pair.
For one pair of socks.
Yeah.
So it's like, is it just the material? Is it like a built in arch support to it?
No, it's just the material. Yeah.
Really?
I never would have thought.
Because I'm sure, particularly, whether it's a Hoker or what other type of shoe, there's going to be built in arch. Like, I would imagine sometimes too, if you got too much support, that could be detrimental.
I would assume so. I'm very like plain vanilla when it comes to like my shoes, other than like my race day shoes. Like, yes, I do want a pair of super shoes because I might as well, if everyone around me is going to be in them, like I'm going to take full advantage of that. But other than that, like I'm very just like basic running shoes that are just going to give me point to point.
So let's talk about that then. Shoes also break down. So how often are you going into
a new pair?
A new pair. And then I would imagine you get a couple races out of the super shoes.
Yeah. So this will probably be my fourth marathon in these pair of race shoes. And I've done 5 and 10Ks. They're on their last leg. They're going to get retired after Chicago. But a pair of regular shoes, I think it's like suggested like 400 miles you're supposed to replace them. I keep them a little bit longer than that. I usually don't realize how bad they are until I get that fresh pair. And then you're like, oh man, I've been literally like stepping on rocks and being able to fill all of them. And then you're like on a cloud for that next week that you're in the new pair. So I'll get like 600 to 700 miles, just depending on like, am I wearing them purely for running or have I been wearing them just to walk around or whatever. Usually I know when it's like, all right, these are done.
Once they've done the running phase, do they transfer into the walk around phase? It's
like a walk around phase. And then once I get the new pair, then those are like my lawn mowing shoes. Like they have a whole life cycle. Yeah.
Lawn mowing shoes and like the Hoka super shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. All right.
Bouncing, mowing the grass. Yeah. My legs will never get tired.
That's exactly it. So we covered the established accountability because it sounds like there's clubs locally if people are very serious about getting into it.
Yeah.
Because it is, let's face it, it's a small niche.
Yeah, yeah. You're not just going to go up to someone on the street and be like, hey, you want to run with me? Yeah. Most likely they're going to say no.
Right.
But there are people out there. But for a while, I was kind of just a lone wolf, just would go out by myself. And I still am. Like I run usually 6 days a week, and I would say at least 4, most times 5 days of a week, I'm by myself. And usually like 1 or 2 days a week, I'm with someone else or with a group or something like that.
Do you like that better?
Being alone or being with a group?
Being alone.
It depends on the day. Like, some days I just want to be, it is my, like I said, my 1 hour or 2 hours of my day that it's just me. I'm not focused on anything else than just me and my run. But it is very nice to have someone with you, though, to like it makes the miles go by faster. If you're running a hard effort, it makes that go by a lot faster. It keeps you accountable. It's easy to be like, all right, I'm going to run this workout today. You get like halfway through it and you're like, maybe do I really need to finish this today, or can I just call it good here? Like if other people are there, like they're going to pull you through it, which is very nice.
Yeah. So we've talked about the super shoes. We've talked about all the enhancements and maybe even the knowledge of the training, which people didn't have in the 70s and the 80s and even in the 90s. I can't believe that, saying the 90s, that's still almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just weird. Still blows my mind. Do you see, maybe in your lifetime, a sub-2-hour marathon?
I do, actually, yeah. I think just everything... Everyone's been getting so much faster, not even just in the marathon. Across the board, everything has gotten so much faster, and shoe technologies has helped that. But also, we just have so much more knowledge of the science behind running it and all that. And so last year in Chicago, I think the world record was set. The time, I want to say, it was like a 2:01 something. And so people are already knocking on the door. Yeah. So it's there. It's just going to be taking the right day, the right person, right conditions, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, the world record holder ended up passing away.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So we ran the Chicago. So that would have been in October. And actually, it was the day of the Super Bowl. He was training in Kenya. And him and his coach went off the road, and they were up in some mountainous area of Kenya and drove off a cliff, and both of them passed away. He was like 21 years old. Like, if there was going to be someone that was going to do it, like, it was probably going to be him would be like the best bet to do it, because he was already so close at 21. So yeah, that's was the whole running world was obviously anytime someone passed away. But yeah, when you have someone with that much talent. But yes, to get back to the original question, yes, I think there's no doubt it's going to happen. It's just, how long is it going to take, and who's going to be the one to do it?
So
everyone's chasing it, though.
Yeah. So let's and I want to go back to your time just for a second, because I mean this complimentary when I say it. For a guy that has a full-time job, has a full family life, you're just running some stupid speeds out there for, you know what I mean? So what was last year's time that 2:41, and we're going to leave the, we'll say 2:41. Is that what you kind of?
2:42-ish. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
So 2:42. What's that break down to? Because my Portsmouth Masculines might not take me there. What's that break that down
to? Per mile, I think it was like 6:12 per mile, I want to say. Something like that.
26 miles at a 6:12 pace.
But when you go to any of these races, and there's people, like in my little cluster of finishers, we're all the same. We all have full-time jobs and are just kind of doing this in our free time and going out there and running. So there's nothing, you don't get into like the do it professionally until like 30 minutes faster than what I am. Yeah.
But still, and that's the piece too that I thought came across with Steve and comes across with you too, Donovan, is the humbleness in what you're doing, and you guys are doing it at such a high level, because Steve's thing too is, you know, if you finish in this piece, that huge, in this one case, the MOAB.
Oh, Moab, the Moab. Ultra. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wants the belt buckle.
Yeah.
You have to finish in a certain time to get this.
Yep.
He's got the belt buckle.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just, it's that inner drive that I see you guys have that just, and there's also a humbleness that comes with that, because it'd be very easy to have. So, I mean, it's a great quality to have is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. No, I think that is another unique thing about the running community is we know the amount of effort, the amount of work. The marathon I ran in the spring was down in Virginia Beach. My dad lives down in that area. So it was his first time seeing me run a marathon. And the first thing he said was like, or maybe not the first thing, but one of the first things he was like, I couldn't believe watching all these runners finish and they immediately just like went to the person next to them, gave them a high five, gave them a hug or whatever. Like we're out there trying to run as fast as we can. And some of us are more competitive than others, but at the end of the day, like we know what that person just went through, the amount of work that the last 6 months it took to get there. And yeah, I think you're always just looking at people around you and getting impressed by what they're doing. Like I know, to some people, doing a marathon seems crazy, but there's always someone else that's doing something that's a little faster, a little further, or whatever. That you're like, I look up to people, and I'm like, how do you do that though? Like Steve was a great example of like, man, the commitment to do. I know what the commitment is like to do 26.2, like do double that or quadruple that. Like that's a whole other commitment. So
yeah. So I guess I've got my questions asked. What's your, you have the question.
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask, are you comfortable sharing your baby's name?
Yes. Yes, we are. So not born yet, but his name will be Miles. So aptly named. It wasn't exactly because of running, even though that I think that did kind of underlying play a little bit of a factor. You know, both Hannah and I, we met running cross country in high school, and for every race I've done. Hannah's been there. She's supported me through it all of all my training, all the hours that I'm not at home. So she's as big a part of this as I am. And we were just kind of spitting out names, and she had mentioned Milo. And then I was like, well, what about Miles instead? And she was like, I don't know. And then we kept going. But then we kept going, and I think we ended up like Googling something, and Milo like loosely translates to miles in some language. I don't even know what it was. And I was like, see? And that kind of led to it. So it wasn't exactly running, but it definitely played a role.
But it's kind of cool though, because the lineage of Hannah's dad
yeah.
to you guys,
yeah.
you know, to Hannah's support of yeah. you during yeah. your running.
Running has been a part of both of our lives since we were little kids. With Hannah being around, I mean, she was around the cross-country team when she was a toddler because her dad was right. coaching, so she just yeah. was there and everything. And then I was just the hyperactive kid that just ran laps around the house. That was my start into running. But yeah, I mean, I credit running to a lot of other success that I've had in life, just the self-discipline and everything. So something very important to both of us. So it's no pressure on our side. I feel like saying all this and then naming a miles, like we're setting up, like you have to run, but he's free to choose whatever. But if he chooses to run, I'll be right there to support him.
And I think yeah. you and Hannah would be there if whatever.
Yes, miles, absolutely. Yeah.
Future miles.
You just have
does.
To change his name.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
I already have, we have some friends in Canada that have already said when he comes to visit Canada, his name is Kilometers when he's up there. So, yeah. So
that's awesome. So I do. I kind of fibbed a little bit. I do have a final question.
Yeah.
I guess this would be to anyone that hasn't started, or even to anybody that's going to listen. Or what would be your advice to somebody that's just going to get into running, whether it's the mental aspect of it, whether it's the time commitment, worried about getting hurt, to equipment? What would you kind of say to that person?
Yeah, I would say just like get started. One, like in some capacity. Well, actually, before you even do that, I would say like actually want to run. Like, I feel like that's yeah. another thing. I always hear people being like, oh, I need to run more. I should really get into running. And I'm like, why though? Because if you're not going to like it, then the chances of you actually doing it is so I'm for a sustained period. Like with me with the gym, I don't enjoy it. I've tried numerous times and I just don't like it, so I end up falling off. So the same thing is going to happen. I feel like people, it is a great way to stay fit regardless of if you're running fast, slow, whatever. So it is a great activity, but there's also other great activities as well. So if you're like, all right, I want to give it a real shot, then I would just say get started with something and don't be afraid to run slow, because that was been kind of the theme throughout of avoiding injury and just being able to consistently do it is going to take you a lot further. So if you're able to, even if that's, you know, taking walking breaks here and there to make sure your effort isn't getting too far ahead of what your capabilities are, like, so you shouldn't be coming home after each run just totally exhausted. You should feel like you got a good workout in, but you shouldn't be like crawling in the front door. Like it's okay to be that, yeah, every once in a while, but if you're doing that every single day, you're not going to last long. So being able to get out there every day is the key to longevity in running.
Perfect. Perfect advice. All right. I want to thank Donovan for his time here and, to his future successes that I know that he will have. I appreciate his time and his insights. And good luck in Chicago, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Daryl.
You
appreciate
got it.
Appreciate it.
Got it. Thank you.